The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
He is so smart. I've seen so much, but he can make the complex so simple that it humbles you and embarrasses you. I was embarrassed yesterday listening to him, how smart he is, how simple it was. He went, he went 4.5 hours with just with the coaches. Forget the clinic. Like, he came in and met with our coaching staff. And 3.5 hours in, I was like, Coach, would you like a water, a cup of coffee? Would you like to use the restroom? Because I desperately had to use the restroom, you know. And he's like, I'm fine, Matt. I was like, yes, sir.
Oh, I could definitely relate. I could relate. I mean, that's how I assume people talk about me. You know, that's probably what
exactly.
You say after show.
Like after every show,
like when you finish Brother from Another, you're probably like, I was embarrassed. Listen to how smart Michael is.
I was embarrassed after talking to Mike Smith and listening to what Mike Smith had to say. I was embarrassed for him.
I'm convinced that's what our viewers say. It's like, oh my God, like how Michael Smith makes things so simple, or are they saying that I'm simple? Either way, I just imagine, you know, that's how people, you know, respond to our rhetoric on this here program.
Listen, I'm gonna tell you what, this is how people respond to. Like Mike, it's not how people respond to Michael Smith, respectfully. It's how people respond to Prince, Black Thought, Bill Belichick, geniuses of industry. They get this kind of conversation.
Titans.
They get these honors, which is why, I don't know, people like you, Mike, I don't know, people like you say, oh, I'm not surprised. Bill Belichick didn't get a head coaching job. I'm not surprised. Be surprised. Be embarrassed. Be embarrassed that Bill Belichick is not coaching in the NFL, but Matt Eberflus is. Like, come on.
Well, when you put it that way, well, first of all, ain't no reason for Matt Eberflus to be catching strays this early on a Wednesday morning.
Why not?
Was completely uncalled for. But when you put it that way, I mean, okay. speaking of embarrassing, and I'm sure you could, you know, fill in the blank with any number of names that are currently coaching in the NFL. It was never about. Listen, I didn't want to spend that much time on this. I just wanted to, you know, talk about how much Matt Rhule sounds like he was talking about me. But since you brought it up, it was never about Bill Belichick's football acumen. It was never about that. It was whether or not another organization wanted to partner with him despite the very same difficulties that caused a relationship in New England, a very successful one for the most part, to run its course. That's what didn't surprise me. That another organization didn't want to sign up for the very thing that Robert Kraft divorced him for.
Well, speaking of, and this is not a shot. This is not a shot. But Robert Kraft.
Here comes a shot.
No, it's not. It's not a shot.
Of course it is. Coming from you. Of course it is. Of course it is. Matt Eberflus is like, damn, dog. I mean, like, so go ahead. What you got now?
Matt Eberflus says, hey, when you say it that way, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
I got no comeback for that.
That ain't even personal. But Robert Kraft, you're talking about divorce. Robert Kraft and others have been on second and third relationships. That's not a shot. They've been on second and third relationships.
Sure.
Arthur Blank, I think, is has had two or three relationships. This has happened for some people.
Right.
So that's part of it. So yeah, Bill Belichick, you cannot. I think it's foolish. It's really foolish for anybody, any owner or general manager, to look at Bill Belichick and say, "Well, it sure did get ugly in the end after in New England." Hey, did it get ugly after year five? No. Was it ugly after year 10? No. It was ugly right around year 18, 19. And if I last 18 or 19 years with you guys, you know what you're going to have? You're going to have a lot of Lombardis up on your shelves behind those cases. So, look, it didn't work out with the other one. But why are you bringing up old stuff? Why are you bringing up my previous relationship? Why are you bringing up my ex when I'm right here telling you what I can bring to you? And just like anybody else, some people you click with, some people you don't.
I'm not. Listen, please don't take this. Talking about not being a shot. Please don't take this as ageism. I just think it's trending toward a younger man's profession. Younger man's profession. But I will say this.
Oh, I know. Like, first of all, we were born in the same decade. So ageism. You talking to the audience? You talking to me? Because we were born in the same.
No. I just mean, you know, older people in general.
I just want to point that out to you.
Having said that, all I hope is that Bill Belichick stays close to the game. He has a lot to offer. He's a walking, not only institution, but an encyclopedia. I hope we get to see and hear some of what Matt Rhule was referencing. So whether he's coaching or not, I mean, he's got nothing else to prove coaching-wise. He does have a record to break, but nothing else to prove coaching-wise. I just like to see him in some capacity stay connected to the game of football. Hopefully we can be articulate enough, or I could be articulate enough. I don't really give two shits about you in this context, to convince the powers that be to send us, or me, just even just me, to Brazil. Four and five.
That's no, we got both of them.
So the matchup is set. It is Packers Eagles in Brazil. Closest I ever been to Brazil was Street Fighter 2 when I picked Blanca. Okay, I've always wanted to go to Brazil. I really would love to experience this. So what's our sales pitch? What do we, you know, you're the author. You know, you're the New York Times bestseller. We need to craft a sale. Maybe I will bring you in on this. You know, okay, we need to craft a sales pitch to get to Brazil to see Jordan Love's Packers against Jalen Hurts' Eagles. That's a great matchup. Great matchup. Two young franchise quarterbacks, two story franchises, a wide receiver core in Green Bay that you know nothing about, but you will learn soon enough. Yeah, you know what? Maybe for research purposes. Maybe you should go down to Brazil and see what I'm talking about when I say that the Packers
have the best
young wide receiver core in the NFL. Maybe that's part of your sales pitch. You want to go and explore.
That is part of it.
The deepest young receiver room in the league. See Jordan Love. Get to know Jordan Love. Jalen Hurts. See how he immerses himself in the culture of Brazil. Yeah, that sounds like a good pitch, right?
So I would say that. Yeah, I need to go. I need to go to learn the game and learn the culture. I'm all about it in Brazil. And in the game on Peacock, this is a Peacock game.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So games on Peacock. We're here.
I would do five shows that week.
We appreciate you. We appreciate you watching on Peacock TV.
I do five shows that week. Live tape, whatever you want. You know.
That might be the pitch too. That might be it. Or simply this, it's never happened before. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the NFL in Brazil? I really can't. So I'm looking forward to a Friday night NFL game. A Friday night NFL game in Brazil. That culture knows football, just not American football. So
yeah.
I just want to see how it plays out. Two good opponents in September. I think it's just going to be festive, and it really speaks to, I got to give him credit, it speaks to, we're almost getting close to the culmination of Roger Goodell's financial vision. Now, he's made plenty of mistakes as the leader of the NFL, as the spokesperson, a highly paid spokesperson for the NFL. But his financial vision, when he took over in 2006, was to take a with all apologies to Jim Collins, all to take the NFL from good to great. And he did. He has. So we got Germany. We got Mexico. We got Brazil. Obviously, England. There's going to be more. We've got streaming. We've got Peacock and Amazon. And just the financial pie has grown exponentially. Stadium value, well, not stadiums, but franchise values have soared. So this is really, we're climbing. We're probably 2 days away from being atop the mountain for you climbers out there. And so I just like to see it. I just like to see this part of the journey.
So I'm going to need you to stop talking because that was so articulate until they may end up sending you instead of me, which is not the idea. If you start contextualizing things, that was almost like an essay in real time. I'm just so excited about the Packers. Honestly, Eagles, they're always going to be in the mix in the conversation. I'm so excited about the direction. The Green Bay Packers and their non-first-round wide receivers are going. But I'm not going to bring up old stuff.
Here we go.
We'll bring it up another day. Okay, stand in the NFC North and the soon-to-be franchise quarterback of the Chicago Bears, Caleb Williams, widely expected and assumed and presumed to be going number one to the Chicago Bears, a market you know well, a franchise that still has not had a 4,000-yard passer. They just jettisoned Justin Fields, turning the page yet again to another franchise quarterback. They're nesting. They got this great supporting cast that Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus have put together, to ensure the success of their young franchise quarterback. And then here comes Greg McElroy with a take that got Caleb Williams' attention.
The number one thing that concerns me most about Caleb Williams, I look at all the players that have been drafted, number one, number two, number three, way up there near the top of the draft, and seldom are the guys that ultimately go on to become elite players. Every single one of them has a gigantic chip on their shoulder. Like they're mad at the world, or they create some type of false narrative about themselves that people don't believe in them. Caleb Williams has never had that. I mean, Caleb Williams, from the time he stepped on campus at Oklahoma to the time he stepped on campus at SC, he has never experienced adversity. I do wonder about, is there a sense of entitlement? Is there that chip on the shoulder that's going to keep him going 10, 12 years down the road, the way it does Mahomes, who's still pissed that he got drafted 10th. Like still, to this day, is mad about that. Tom Brady, who still, you're too old, you're too slow. You can't, I mean, all those guys find that internal, they're almost a little crazy. Just be real, you got to be a little crazy to be elite.
So hat tip to This Is Football, hosted by Kevin Clark. That was Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback. So then Caleb Williams claps back. Caleb Williams basically goes on Twitter, and he goes B-Rabbit from 8 Mile and goes, "Don't ever try to judge me, dude. You don't know what the fuck I've been through." Okay, so he just lays out all the stuff. He's like, "Look, you know what? I'm bored. I got time today. I look at my watch. I got time today." And he decides to define adversity.
Okay. I like it.
No, I'll tell you why. But you first, since you said you like it. You first. You jumped in and said you like it. Why? Well, go ahead. You keep it.
First of all, because Michael, he responded in a way for X, formerly known as Twitter, the artist formerly known. I can't even put them in the same category. I'm sorry. I take that back. But for X, this is reasonable. This is polite. Like, Caleb Williams had time, but he didn't dig in like he could have. He really could have he could have gone 10 toes in and thrown some hands at him too. Digital hands. And so he basically gives you the definition of adversity and what he's gone through. But I could see going even further. How you gonna tell me I've never been through adversity? What you know about me? You know my mama. You know my daddy.
Judge me,
you don't know me. You don't know me. So I've never been through any adversity. Maybe. Ooh, how about this, Greg? maybe I've been through adversity and I'm more mature than the other people that you've mentioned, and I just handle it better. You want to talk about, we talked about church folks last week. Church folks say, I don't look like what I've been through. Maybe he's one of those guys. And so he's just smooth with it. And he carries it with him, but he doesn't have to share it with everything. He doesn't have to post it and tweet it all the time. And here's the other thing. I'm looking at some of the number one picks. Matthew Stafford got a chip on his shoulder. Peyton. What chip does jokester Peyton Manning have on his shoulder? Oh, I was the son of a highly regarded quarterback, Archie Manning.
No, there's a lot of silver spoon guys. Yeah, there's a lot of silver spoon guys.
What are you talking? They're elite. Period. It ain't got to be some sad. It ain't got to be some blues song for you to be a great NFL quarterback or a great elite athlete anywhere. And you know what? Like, hey, you know, my mama left, my daddy left. You know, I raised it. They had a conversation with me. And I was 5 years old. I barely knew how to go to the potty, and they said, "You're the man in the house now." I remember
sound like
it. Like
Denzel
and
Fences.
Come on, what is this? Good Times? Shut up, man. You ain't gotta be
the original, not the reboot.
Tell me why you didn't like that.
So I'll tell you why I didn't like it, and I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with your overall premise. And allow me to be the old head. Because it's funny. I tell my son a lot. When I get frustrated with Mason, once I calm down, I say to him, I was like, I can't imagine what it must be like to grow up with this.
Oh.
Because I know what it does to our heads at this age.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to give him a break and give him peace because this will, and we've talked about this. We talk about this a lot on this program. Mm-hmm. This will fuck you up. You know, I mean, like, if you let it. It's like, and so I know I'm speaking from an antiquated perspective. Me telling these kids to put the phone down or stay offline, it's like, no, man, that's just not the way of the world. It's not how we live and it's not how we operate in 2024. So it's just like, I'm just wasting my time. But the reason I don't like it is, you know, and you know how I feel about Caleb Williams. I'm a big fan of Caleb Williams. It's probably just generational. I just don't like Caleb or anybody else giving people the time of day that we're talking about that don't know him. Like, with all due respect to Greg McElroy, who, again, I know his family. Like, I've known Greg McElroy for a long time. He does a good job.
Oh, for real? Okay.
Like, yeah, like.
I don't know.
But from a Caleb Williams standpoint, fuck is Greg McElroy? Who is Greg McElroy? Like, it's like, why? Because you're about to enter into a situation where, presumably, no matter how much the Bears have tried to set him up for success, presumably he is going to experience adversity unlike what he's experienced so far. Not to say he hasn't experienced any adversity, but unlike any he's experienced so far. And he's going to have to carry a weight unlike the weight that he's carried to this point. And so I just hope for his sake, but not just his, any of them, man. Like, you cannot let these people steal your joy, and you cannot dignify some of these takes out here with a response. Whether it's, you know, what was the one that Stephon Diggs replied to the other day? You know, Peter Piper picked a pepper or whatever. Well, I don't know. It's like these, like some of this, at least it was Greg McElroy in this instance. It's so many random people out here getting these celebrities and athletes' attention, and I'm just like, yo, man, why you even? Why you care? Like, he don't know you. He doesn't know you. We let too many people who don't know us affect us. We let the opinions of people who have no idea about our lived experiences affect us. I can't tell you. I wish I could go back in time and smack the shit out of myself for all the time I wasted with people I have no idea who they are or what baggage they're bringing to the table or what their agenda is.
Exactly.
So I just, that's
part
all
of it too.
That's all for me. Is I don't want this to be a sign of things to come for Caleb Williams, where, because you know how Chicago is. you know, and you know what they expected already. There was already a controversy before he even got drafted by the team between him and his predecessor in local media and national media, for that matter, when it came to the Bears quarterback position. So I just hope that Caleb Williams doesn't have rabbit ears. I hope he never turns into a hit dog who's hollering. I hope
But everybody does. But that's the problem.
I know.
Like you, what,
I know.
What you're saying.
I know.
Every,
I know.
I'd say what you are advocating for, based on my anecdotal research, what, 30% of the population, 35% of the population says, yep, they live that way. They do it. But most people.
And some people would say, like, yo, don't blame him for defending himself, for clapping back, for defending himself. They're talking about him. They're talking about who he is as a person at his core. Does he have every right to defend himself? Sure.
Yeah, but then feels like how often that
exercise.
Could be a full-time. I get your point. That
That's
could be a full-time job.
That's all I'm
essentially.
Saying. That's all
you know,
I'm
you
saying.
Just keep going because there's always going to be somebody. And we talk about this the other day, just off the air, and I said to you, man, there's so many bad LeBron takes out
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
right?
We were talking about this last night. Yeah.
And I wonder,
in
LeBron.
Yeah,
and I remember when LeBron said at one point he did the.
And he's been guilty of that.
Yeah, he did. But he actually said what you just said. When he was doing an episode of The Shop, I think I brought this up on the show before. He's doing an episode of The Shop. Lamar Jackson was on. He said, man, when I was 25, I care too much. I care too much mm-hmm. about what people were saying. You got to get to the point where you don't care. You don't give a damn about
right.
what these people have to say. And so, but he's.
Or even if you
LeBron
do.
Is saying,
keep it to
LeBron
yourself.
Is saying that at 30, but he's saying that at 38 at the time, 38, 39.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're saying it, you know, you're about 50.
At 44.
So, yeah 50, right. you're about 50. So,
right.
so you figured that out at 50. So,
cynical
how, like,
with the free advice.
Yeah, like
cynical
how long does it take? It
right.
takes a while. It took you a while. It took LeBron a while. It took me a while to figure it out.
It also may never happen for this generation because this is all they know. This is all they know. You and I can compartmentalize, disconnect all these things from it because we know a world without it. They don't know a world without
yeah,
it.
Good point.
You had one of, but speaking of, we'll talk about Caleb Williams. I'm going to get back to Lamar in a second. But Caleb Williams, you had a Drake May item in your feed. You want to connect Drake May with Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I mean,
take Drake.
Take Drake was always my line. Take Drake. Because I like him. I hear what everybody has to say about it, and this is the time, and this is the beauty of the draft process and the frustrating part of the draft process where you have the attention. And the NFL world, college football, pro football, fans, hardcore fans, fans who have never seen you are all, you got all of their attention. And so what happens is not just Merrill Hodge and Greg McElroy, it's everybody's got something to say about Drake May. And Drake May is that dude now. He was that dude the other way about a month ago where, oh, no question, top three. He's got maybe a little Justin Herbert light. He's raw and unrefined and very talented like Josh Allen was at Wyoming. And wait till you see this guy, you know, get some good coaching. Now it's going the other way. They're taking Drake to the woodshed, Mike. They got all... Everybody got something to say about Drake May, and it's not very nice. And so I wonder what he's going through. I hope he looks at the process and says it really doesn't mean anything. There are a lot of people who are predicted. It was predicted that they translate beautifully to the game. And they haven't to the league. And some people were dismissed, and they're still playing at a high level. So it's entertainment right now, but it really doesn't have a lot of nutritional value on April 10th.
I'm just curious, and I don't want to get too sidetracked because I want to move on to Lamar, but is that why you moved heaven and earth to get CJ Stroud out of me instead of just picking at the 103 and taking Drake May? Is that, like, did you start to buy into some of the things that people are saying about Drake May? You decided, hey, let me go throw the kitchen sink at Michael for CJ Stroud?
I don't listen to
you.
Okay. I don't listen to the peanut gallery, Mike. I don't listen to the peanut gallery.
Okay.
You know? I just stay ahead. I just stay focused. I stay focused on what I'm doing.
Okay.
On what I'm doing. Do you hear You hear Jabril Peppers the other day? Just kind of throw in the comparison is a thief of joy. Did you hear him just like drop that line yesterday?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It absolutely is. I was just telling somebody the other day.
I'm just focused. Okay.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
With our trade.
You brought up Lamar in the context of LeBron with Lamar on the shop, right?
Right.
Lamar's been known to, you know, dabble in these social media streets and respond to critics or, you know, post, you know, set the record straight as he sees fit. I laugh now. First of all of these dudes could, like, just look at Lamar Jackson and draw inspiration from Lamar Jackson. Once upon a time, says Hall of Fame executive Bill Polian, maybe he should switch to receiver. The last pick of the first round, which is not exactly a snub, but the last pick of the first round, nonetheless, after his brilliant career at Louisville. Going from can't throw the ball to NFL MVP, going from this time a year ago, I feel like it was feel like just yesterday. I'm old enough to remember when it seemed like the relationship with the Ravens was beyond repair. And now here we are. This brought a smile to my face. Now here we are with Eric DaCosta, the general manager, talking about, oh, yeah, Lamar is watching film on receivers. And he's going to give us, his input. And we're going to listen to him when it comes to what receiver we should draft in the deepest receiver class in recent memory in terms of prospects. So that just warmed my heart, because that's how you treat a franchise quarterback. And it's not just in terms of giving him his money, but it's giving him his autonomy, his authority, his, you know, empowering him, you know, listening to his voice, have him be an extension of the franchise, have him be a partner in this process, which really speaks to why, no matter how much money quarterbacks are getting paid, they're still underpaid. And the equity conversation that Caleb Williams was the ownership conversation that the percentage of the cap conversation, as well as the ownership conversation that Caleb Williams was at the center of, is certainly legitimate in my mind, because this is how you treat franchise quarterbacks.
Do you think that should happen more often? I actually do. I think it's a
consulting quarterback.
Consulting quarterbacks asking about receivers,
yeah.
Even if they're not necessarily like great. I think.
Yes.
I think if this guy just started.
If I got a throw to him, yeah, you should want to know what I think. I may not be a scout.
And they're seeing something.
You know the only thing dumber than that? You know the only thing dumber than not talking? So maybe you're right. Maybe the Ravens are doing the obvious. You know the only thing dumber than not talking to a quarterback about which receiver he's throwing to? Is not talking to personalities about who they co-hosting with. Yeah, like that. That's what the, sorry, tangent. Nothing grinds my gears more than producers or executives who decided they can create chemistry in a lab. That's just not, that's, why would you not, like the history of this show is somebody talking to you, okay, and you being like, I want to do this with Michael Smith. I was at home literally minding my own business. Thank goodness somebody didn't say, hey, let's just put you with another black guy. Like, let's just say, hey, you, come here. It was like, no, like, you pick the black guy that we're going to put you. No, it was like you pick the black guy that we're going to put you with. It's going to be a black dude, but you pick the black dude.
Don't worry, don't be a black dude. No.
No, in this context, yes, it was.
No, the hell it wasn't.
No, well, yeah, it was. I mean, you and I, anyway, bottom line is, to answer your question, yes, every team should talk to their quarterback about who he's throwing to. The Cowboys need to talk to their quarterback about his contract. But that's not even who, that's not even who I want to focus on, because they got a lot of contractual issues. And Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk summarized this brilliantly when it comes to, you know, they got to pay the piper when it comes to Dak Prescott. They got to pay the piper when it comes to CeeDee Lamb. And they got to pay the piper when it comes to Micah Parsons. We're not going to get into all the salary cap management and whether the Cowboys are, in fact, cheap or not, despite the brand that Jerry Jones like to perpetuate. We got to get into what the flagship station of the Cowboys, one of their personalities, had to say about Micah Parsons. 105.3 The Fan. Again, the flagship station of the Dallas Cowboys.
I have heard from way too many people this offseason. Way too many. I'm talking about at least four different people that Micah has worn thin there. Now, I don't know how much is true and how much it actually hurts. I don't know whether this is the behavior of a typical superstar. I don't know how damaging it is, but all I do know is this. I've heard from way too many people. If Micah Parsons was out of there, there'd be a decent amount of people inside the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco smiling or breathing a sigh of relief. That is my hot take statement that to me is really close to factual about just dealing with him.
I hope that the folks at 105.3 The Fan heard from the folks at the Star and they basically gave him a Jonah Hill like, dog, hey, that's not helping. This is not your, we're partners. We're in business together. That's not helping matters. Unless this is what the Cowboys want out there, which would blow my mind if it is what they want out there. But what struck me about this when I heard this and I read about this was like, talk about brands. These are the Dallas Cowboys we're talking about. Like, before TNT knew drama, the Cowboys knew drama. Like, all their entire brand, history, narrative is around characters. Hell, they made documentaries about some of the characters from the glory days or the last glory days in the early 90s from the Dallas Cowboys. They still talk about them. Some of them are on television. Okay,
Most of them are still eating off of the antics
of the 90s Dallas Cowboys. People have written books, done documentaries. It's the stuff of legend. I say all that to say, what on earth could Micah Parsons be doing? Tweeting a podcast? What could he be doing for somebody to suggest that this exceptional talent we've watered down, to quote Black Thought, we're losing grip of what garbage mean. We've watered down the term generational talent. But this generational talent on defense, what could he possibly be doing to rub them the wrong way to where they feel like they'd be better off without Micah Parsons? With all due respect, because it sounded like this was this short of like short of per sources, a report. This sounded like my man was going hard as he could with this information. OK, like it sounded like he actually had been. But I want to know who's telling him this, because this feels far-fetched and so ridiculous. Like, unless Micah Parsons is leading a double life and he's up to some stuff that I have no idea what he's doing, it would take an awful lot. Like we talked about it the other day, you make exceptions for exceptional people.
But you didn't want to the other day.
I didn't. What was I talking about? Who was I talking about?
Steph Diggs. Go be great somewhere else. You gave the Bills an A for their trade of Steph Diggs because I don't know
how exceptional he is at this point. He's still very good. I don't know how exceptional he is at this point.
He's not the Micah Parsons of receivers.
That's a great call out. That's a great call out. I appreciate you pointing that out. But there's a balance. There is a balance. But I'm saying, okay, so thank you. Micah Parsons got to be wilding out in that facility in a way that has yet to come to light in order for them to think that his production no longer outweighs the quote unquote problems that he's causing for people internally. Like, we need to get to the bottom of this. This is utterly ridiculous, as the old folks say.
Well, we haven't heard from the Cowboys yet.
Interestingly enough.
As of this morning, and the Cowboys could, you know, they could really easily, because he is their best player, and I say that without fear of contradiction.
That's saying something. He's their best player.
He's the best player on the Cowboys. So if they really have a problem with what's being said, what's being discussed, because Dallas Cowboys, he said this on their flagship station, we're talking about it. A lot of people are going to be talking about it until the Cowboys respond. Yeah. And that's different from a brother from another doing it. Yeah,
that's
the next press conference.
That's the flagship station.
Yeah, the next press conference, they'll be asked about this. But you said, you know, what
Jerry Jones goes on that station, what, every other day?
Yeah. You asked the question, what could he be doing that would be so obnoxious to the Cowboys? You're right in that some of their biggest characters have done some stuff. They got some antics. But the antics have always been facing out, like antics to the world, not like, antics like to the building.
Like with the law.
Well, okay, but they're cool with that. Hey, it's the law, but it's not us.
Like personal it's the law, it's not the, shit, you know?
It's the law, but it's not the star.
Yeah.
So we may have to, the only thing the star has to do, we got to bring our in-house counsel, maybe, to deal with you. But you're not going into, and I'm not saying Micah Parsons is doing this, but I wonder. You're not going into coaches' meetings. You're not demanding certain things. You're not being high maintenance. Like all of these things, you've got a really high level. You got a high motor. You're passionate about football. And sometimes when you're away from football, you're away from the football facility, you do some stuff that you shouldn't do. And we got to clean that up and bring you back in.
Lawrence Taylor. Maybe with
Micah Parsons, the opposite. We haven't heard about anything he's done away from the facility, but maybe all the problems or the drama or the tension happens in the facility. I don't know. I'd be cool with it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know either. I know what I see on Sundays. I invoke Lawrence Taylor, which a lot of people have, you know, brought up his name in terms of like the ultimate, like, wait, we gotta babysit LT. We gotta watch LT. We gotta get LT to the game. Like Mike Parsons is so disruptive on Sundays or Mondays or Saturdays or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever day they're playing. He's so disruptive on game day until, to me, it would just take exponentially more of a distraction inside that building to get to a point where they don't want him around. That blew my mind. Yeah. Anyway, we've blown past time. We got to take a break, talk some hoops. And listen, I love talking about high-maintenance people because I've been accused of being high-maintenance.
No.
And guess what? I'm worth
it. No. Are you?
Fuck yeah.
First of all, has anybody ever accused you of being high maintenance? I haven't heard that.
Not to my face.
I haven't heard that. If they have accused you of that, they have said it to your face, I'm sure.
Has anybody ever told you how paranoid you are? No, not to my face. Have you?
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Have you heard something? The numbers are in. The ratings are in from Sunday and Monday's women's and men's national championship games, respectively. And they are mind-blowing. They are mind-blowing. So it's one thing when it's like, okay, most watch women's basketball game ever, or most watch sporting, or among the most watched sporting events in the last year or whatever. Iowa, South Carolina checks in as the most watched basketball game in years.
Wow.
Basketball game.
Basketball.
Not women, not men, not college, not Olympic. Basketball game, which means move over NBA, like basketball game of any kind. And for the first time, it outdrew the men's championship by more than 4 million viewers.
Significantly. Yes, significantly.
Like it wasn't close. It wasn't close. And so, I mean, this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. Now, the growth for the women's game is across the board. But specifically, I'm just speaking specifically to the record-shattering telecasts.
Wow. Look at this.
That we've seen since last year's national title game. So we had last year's national title game was around 9.9. The rematch broke that mark, which was like in the 12s, I want to say 12-3 or something like that. Iowa UConn was at 14.
Broke that mark.
Right. Broke that mark. Right. It was all temporary. And here we are up over 18. The common denominator is Caitlin Clark in Iowa, specifically for these record-setting telecasts. Ratings, again, are up in general, but I'm specifically talking about those telecasts because we're talking about this being the most watched basketball game in 5 years. That's the common denominator here. She's not the only draw, but that's the common denominator. So I ask that to ask you, and I'll answer my own question before you do, if you don't mind. It's like,
go ahead. Yeah.
Is this temporary, or is this the new normal? Blip or trend? I would lean more toward trend. And this is, again, why Dawn Staley was so classy and savvy for thanking Caitlin Clark, understanding that a rising tide floats all boats. Back in the day, you and I used to go to parties. Sometimes it's a party that everybody knows about and everybody goes and it's the hot spot and don't need to advertise. There's lines outside the door. Other times there's parties that like people been talking about and telling you about, like, yo, you need to fall through this spot. Like you need to go to the Lizard Lounge and hear this brother Michael Holly drop bars on the mic. Like you need to come check this out. And then you get there and you're like, oh snap, I've been missing out. This is what people have been talking about and trying to get me to come to this here party. And I think this is sustainable because, and many people have pointed this out, there's so much more emotional investment and so much more brand development that the women's game has produced, right, because their players are staying longer. But beyond that, it's like, okay, whatever brought you to this party, it's like, come for the storylines, come for the subplots, come for the drama, you know, come for the characters, come for the rivalries, but stay for the incredible basketball. And so the reason why they're staying power when it comes to this trend, in my mind, is because even if you are a casual who came to this NCAA tournament and these, you know, Final Four games, or Elite Eight in Final Four games, for the Caitlin Clark phenomenon, how many more people did you meet at the party? How many more people did you get introduced to at this party?
Yes.
That make you want to stay and keep coming back for more and more. So I guess wow is all I got. I'll end it with that. Wow, but get used to it. I don't think it's a one-off. I don't think it's a one-off.
And wow is a great place to pick it up. I'm overjoyed for basketball fans. I'm overjoyed for fans of women's basketball, for the players, in that sport.
Because they've been telling us. Because they've been telling everybody.
The media that covers it.
They've been saying, cover this. Right. Tell our stories.
The coaches. Like, you know,
shine a spotlight on this. This product is great. Tell our stories. And that's what finally mainstream media are doing.
They said, tell our stories. They asked. Tell our stories. But just in case you don't tell our stories, we're going to tell our own stories and we're going to celebrate. Even if you're not going to celebrate us, we're going to celebrate us. And so that's why we mentioned Dawn Staley. That is right on brand for who Dawn Staley is. And a lot of people, not all of them, but a lot of players and coaches are in women's basketball. Hey, we got this group together. We're going to celebrate each other. We're going to stand up for women, whether other people do it or not, whether other men or women or men or women do it or not. We're going to do it for ourselves. And they've done that. And we're all late. Those who have come along, going from 3.9 million to nearly 19 million. A lot of those people are late, but a lot of them. And I want to celebrate them today. A lot of them have been there the entire time. Yeah. And have been saying, see, hey, this is a great product. And look, this is part of it is what women's basketball, it's not just the growth of the ratings. It's the growth of the game itself. And I'm not even talking about stylistically. I'm talking about programs around the country that have come up. I can tell you
this. Parity. Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about Iowa basketball in 2005. Or 2010. I wasn't thinking about South Carolina basketball in 2010. LSU football, maybe. Not LSU women's basketball. And so some of these programs have come in and introduced themselves. Because if you look at that chart, you see some familiar names in the early days when the ratings weren't that great. The product was, but the ratings weren't.
We've come a long way since.
UConn.
Since
Tennessee.
UConn's dominance. Remember the question? Is UConn's dominance bad for women's basketball? We've come a long way from that conversation.
And they got characters.
That's the thing. Characters.
I'm going to say the characters.
Any TV show, any drama, any form of entertainment, you got to get invested in the characters. You got to get invested in the personalities and their individual growth and evolution. Absolutely. That's big.
Nobody. Well, I want to say nobody.
I'm talking to a best-selling author. But, you know about characters.
But the characters, storylines, most people are not here for the purity of the game. You're not here for that. You're not here for that. Stop that.
Right.
You can go anywhere and get the purity. You can just say, I just want to go and see the beauty of the game. Yeah. And you want some storylines with it too. And so women's basketball has given us that, whether it was Caitlin versus Angel, Caitlin versus South Raven and the Revenge Tour. Whether it was Gino and Dawn and Kim Mulkey, all these characters in women's basketball. And they said, hey, they lost last year. South Carolina lost last year. They were taken out by Iowa. Now here they are facing Iowa again, a chance to be undefeated. And they lost five players. They're starting five to the league. And now here they are starting over. I mean, so many good storylines for women's basketball.
With the characters comes coverage. Which with coverage comes critique.
Yeah.
With critique comes conversation. With conversation comes controversy. All of which contributes to the growth of the game. It's all healthy. All of it's great. Whether it's a bad call or frankly a bad article. And hear me on this. Hear me on this when I say this. Two things can be true in this case. You can have commentary that is problematic and offensive and yet good for the overall growth of the sport. Because like you're saying, it's not the game itself is not always going to keep people invested. It's sometimes it has to be the controversies. Sometimes it has to be the debates. Sometimes it has to be toxicity, even, believe it or not. Like all of those things, like whether it's the NFL, whether it's the NBA, the reason those are year-round sports is not always because of the sport itself. So I am in no way condoning inappropriate language, but I'm saying the way or inappropriate coverage, but the way that the basketball community responded to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is emblematic of the growth and the passion and the commitment and the dedication and the overall protection of this game. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you are. You're making perfect sense. And I just want to, I'm going to say one more thing. And I've heard this a lot, and I've heard it from some high profile people who think they're being complimentary. And I think we got to get beyond this. You've heard it too, Mike. Wait, when I say it, you're going to say, oh yeah, I've heard somebody say that, you know, it's like, okay. And they think they're saying something nice. Hey, women's basketball is great. I know the players of women's basketball. I'm not even paying attention to the men. I don't even know anybody in men's basketball. It doesn't, we don't have to do that. You don't have to bash men's basketball to celebrate women's basketball, or you don't have to exaggerate it and say, of course you know. Of course you know some names in men's basketball. You do. And of course they're playing good basketball too. But right now in this moment, we're talking about women's basketball. It's a very compelling product with compelling storylines, which lead, as you say, to would lead to irresistible almost interactions that we're having. Like, we could just go on and on about these stories and our opinions and, hey, this perspective and that perspective, and it's all valid, and this product is inspiring all of it.
Good or bad takes, they're trending.
Here's the other thing.
They're on talk shows. Go ahead.
Here's the other thing. One more thing. This is the last thing I'm going to say.
Yeah, we got company waiting for us.
I know, we got company. I don't want to be rude. I'd like to see what this does for other sports, for other other women's sports in college basketball. Because talking to somebody yesterday, and they pointed out that the Frozen Four, basically the hockey Final Four, is happening. It's been televised for years and years. You know when the Frozen Four became consistently televised for women's hockey? 2021. It 3 years ago, it just started getting the television coverage, and it's not the same coverage. The women's Frozen Four is being played at the University of New Hampshire's arena, which is a small arena. There's no, obviously, NHL franchise in New Hampshire. The men are playing in Minneapolis, where the Minnesota Wild play, a nice pro NHL facility. Yeah. So there are still some inequities in other sports, and I want to see what this movement does for everybody else.
I want to hear what Kurt Heelan has to say from Pro Basketball Talk, our good buddy. We haven't talked to in a while, but, like, let's stick with this theme. We're just three basketball fans, and we're just talking ball. And, Kurt, I know you were captivated by what you saw throughout the women's tournament. Like, what's your reaction to this development, the first ever instance of the women's tournament, or the women's national championship game, I beg your pardon, outdrawing the men's national championship game, and being, the most watched basketball game of any kind in 5 years. What say you?
Well, you touched on part of it is the branding, right? Like, it's just because the women are staying there in college for 4 years and allowing you to invest in them, it just gives you something that right now the college men's game doesn't have, because if there's a Caitlin Clark in the men's game, she's on to the league, right? She's a one and done. The other thing they've got, though, is more stars coming up. Caitlin Clark moves on to Indiana. She'll be the number one pick in next week, actually. Then you still got Paige. You still got UConn. You still got great stories in all those freshmen we just saw in South Carolina. We got Juju out in USC, who's great personality, great game, fun to watch. Like, there's people ready to step up, and it feels like if this was college basketball's Magic Bird moment, women's college basketball Magic Bird moment that really took them to the next level, they've got the up and coming Jordans in North Carolina.
They got Isaiah.
To take it to that next spot.
They got Jordan. They got Dominique. They got other stars to carry that torch. No, absolutely. And you know what? We'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge, dare I call her a friend of the show, Tara Vanderveer, retiring, all-time wins leader in college basketball. Thanks for everything. Thank you for your contribution to sport in general, to women's sports in particular, and for coming on our show. She blessed our show once upon a time, the way Kurt is blessing it right now. Speaking of coaches, though, let me pivot to the Charlotte Hornets G League coach, Lindsey Harding, former WNBA player, obviously former college basketball player, number one overall pick, I believe. It feels like this sea change that we're talking about, this shift that we're talking about culturally, Kurt, it feels like now may just be the time. We thought it would be Becky Hammond, but it feels like now may be the time, and she may be the one to break that particular glass ceiling when it comes to a woman coaching an NBA team. She's being interviewed, by the way. I don't think I mentioned that. She's being interviewed by the Hornets to replace Steve Clifford. Missed the headline. Replace Steve Clifford as head coach of the Hornets. And it feels like she may be the one to break through.
She's got the resume for it. She's got, you know, she's proven she can. She didn't just coach the Kings G League team this year. They had the best record in the league. They made the conference finals. She's very good at this. And I hope, and I believe in this case, but I genuinely hope that it's not just the Hornets ownership wanting to check a box on the way to hiring whoever they're going to hire. That this is a real chance and a real opportunity. Because when you talk about Becky Hammond, who had multiple first chances, or multiple interviews with teams, she said, you know, some of these felt like people felt like they just should, right? They're going to check the box and say, hey.
Token interviews.
Yeah, token interviews. We did this, you know. I don't think that that's the case here. I'll also tell you guys, just talking to people around the league, Lindsay's name comes up. The other name that they would like, if she were available, and she's just, I don't think she's interested, they would love to get Dawn Staley. People see Dawn Staley as a leader who come in and command an NBA locker room tomorrow. I think she's happy where she is. I have heard nothing about that, but I will tell you, NBA people look at her and go, we'd hire her.
Feels natural.
I got to tell you.
I would say the interest feels natural, Michael. The interest in Dawn Staley. Like, how could you not? If you're an NBA team, hell, if you're an office in politics, how could you, a political office, how could you not be interested in Dawn Staley as a candidate in any walk of life?
I'm just telling you this. So I don't buy it. I don't buy
Which
it.
Part?
And when Kirk said, hey, look, I don't want them to just check the box. Check the box and let's have a press conference, because we haven't even checked the box yet. I think NBA owners, I'm just waiting for one of them to have the courage to do it. Just have the courage to do it. I'm not impressed by the chatter. I'm not impressed by the speculation. Mm-hmm. I'm not impressed by the interview. I'm not impressed by the second interview.
Well, let me tell you, Kurt.
Hey, Kurt and Mike. I was looking the other day, looking again, just to make sure I had it right. The San Antonio Spurs, where Becky Hammond got her start as an assistant coach in the league, there were some people she coached with who are now on their second jobs as head coaches in the league. So she was an assistant with Ime. Ime's on his second job. What's his name? James, is it Borrego?
Borrego.
Yeah, he had two opportunities to be a head coach. Sean Marks was an assistant with the Spurs. He's a general manager. So Becky Hammond has been there with the Spurs, did her time with the Spurs, then goes to the WNBA, builds a champion, a two-time champion in the WNBA, and we're still saying, hey, well, we don't know. What don't we know? NBA's not ready. They should be ready. They say they're ready. I don't believe it. Prove it to me. They're not ready.
Right. But at some point, are you saying it will never happen? Or are you just saying you're tired of hearing to talk about
I'm
it? You just want to see a little more action.
They're cowards. I'm saying there are too many cowards. There are too many cowards in the league. Too many cowards.
But only thing I would say to you, though, is this. I don't necessarily have the, I'm going to call it defeatist. You're keeping it a buck, but I'm saying it's going to happen probably when we least expect it, with the person we least expect.
I hope so.
What I think about, Michael? You know what popped in my head when you said that? Sherm Lewis popped in my head. Like, Sherm Lewis should have been a head coach in the NFL. And there's a lot of black men who should have been head coaches in the NFL but weren't. Eventually, and certainly that's still a problem in the NFL. We all know that. But eventually we got to a point where Raheem Morris could get a second job, for example. So you're right. Becky Hammond feels like she's as deserving as anybody. And we've seen this movie before about interviews, but maybe Lindsay Hardy is the one to get it, even if Becky Hammon was always deserving. Maybe she doesn't get it. Maybe it's lip service. Maybe they're just riding a wave. I hear you. I hear your frustration. I share the impatience. But what if it is real? And at some point, Kurt, doesn't it have to be?
I hope it's real.
Because Dawn Staley, I don't know how much experience Dawn Staley has in football, but hell, if I were an NFL team, I'd be looking at Dawn Staley. Because I don't care what the sport or what the profession is, I'm looking at Dawn Staley right now.
The other thing is, it's going to take the right organization and the right owner, like you guys talked about. It's going to take the right star player that is willing to bring her in. Because the star players in the NBA are the people with the power, right? They are the ones who control what's – hey, man, they get a – if the Bucks are hiring a coach this summer, they're getting Adrian Griffin because Giannis Antetokounmpo signed off on it. Who is the star? Is it, maybe it's LaMelo Ball and what they're building in Charlotte. But that's why Becky worked so well in – Hammond worked so well with the Spurs. Tim Duncan was good with it. The Spurs, you know, Tony Parker, when she first came in and it was still a little bit of that group, they were good with it. It's going to take the right player who's like, yeah, no, can she coach? Then let's bring her in. And it might be somebody younger and of a younger generation who's willing to do that.
And that's why I said it's now the time, because I do think there's a correlation between what we're talking about with the growth in the explosion of women's basketball, in particular at the college level, but also the W. I mean, the WNBA draft might outrate the last 5 years worth of drafts for all we know, right? It's like talking about that and this, in this moment that we're in, I think provides maybe the motivation that these quote unquote cowards need, Michael, to take this step. Because you and I both know in any sport, all players want is somebody that can make them better. And that's right. And Lindsay Harding talked about this. You have video guys, Eric Spoelstra, Mike Brown. You have video guys who never played who reached the highest level of coaching. I understand they're men, but you have video guys reaching the highest level of coaching. You have ex-coaches or ex-players, I beg your pardon, who coach. You have television guys who coach. It's like there is no path. And if Lindsay Harding has already proved at the G League level, if she can convince a star or an organization that she can make players better, her gender is going to stand in the way of that in this time and for this generation. There's also a lot of old people having this conversation, not just literally right now, but I don't know how much these young dudes worry about a woman leading a locker room full of men. That feels like such an antiquated, old man way of thinking anyway, that I don't know that this generation necessarily generally subscribes to. I'm not saying there aren't some, but they're watching Caitlin Clark. They're watching Angel Reese. They're watching Dawn Staley. They're growing up in this moment. I just don't know that it's as much of an impediment as it once was. Yes. It's not as much of an impediment as it once was. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, maybe those young guys are not listening, Kurt and Mike, but maybe they're not worried about it, but there's got to be a bridge. So the people in the front office and ownership have to provide the bridge for the young people to have that person in the locker room. And so what's happening is, we're watching it. And then somebody in the front office says, no, we can't. I just can't do it. I just got to go with, hey, I believe in it, but just not for this team. I believe in it for somebody else. It's like when you talk to your neighbors, say, hey, do you believe in affordable housing? Absolutely. How about we put something right down the street? Nope.
Yeah. Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Not in the thing.
Not in my
somewhere else. So.
Yeah. No, I like that. Hey, so you mentioned Giannis as a star player that it would take to endorse, a coach. Giannis avoided disaster. The Bucks avoided disaster. His Achilles seems to be intact based on initial
tests. The Bucks avoided more disaster, additional disaster to what they already have,
as if they don't have enough problems. But it seems like a calf strain, which could cost him a couple of weeks. But the Bucks already had issues before their superstar went down with this injury. Like, I'll ask you like this: where do the Bucks stop or get stopped in these playoffs? Like, this is not how it was supposed to look. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to remember Doc Rivers seeming to have solved their defensive issues. Now they have in film sessions where everybody's speaking their mind, and then of course Giannis goes down with an injury. Like, what is your read on this team as we approach the playoffs, Kurt?
They're confused. They don't know who they are. They're who are the Milwaukee Bucks? What is their identity? Because you knew under Mike Budenholzer there was a plan. The coach they didn't want, whatever you think of his playoff adjustments, they were a defense-first team that played a very specific style of defense, and they leaned heavily on Giannis on offense, but they knew what they were and what they wanted to be. And through this season, they've kind of just dropped that rope. I don't know who they are. They're certainly not the same defensive team, but they don't execute. They're not executing the offense. They're not executing their game plans all that well, and it's just – it's unimpressive, frankly, guys. They're just not very good. They beat the Celtics last night when the Celtics went through the motions and played. Dude, it looked like what was it? Was it Niners? Cowboys? Who was that a few years ago where they were going to play in the next week in the NFL and they just both ran out their subs with vanilla offenses and were giving nothing away? The Celtics did that. They were just like, man, here's some backups and we're not going to run anything fancy. The Bucks have to figure out who they are, and I don't know that Doc's getting through to them. Like, I don't know that he cleaned up some of the low-hanging fruit, but the stuff that's really got to be fixed, forget they can't beat Boston. Can they beat the Knicks if they're really together? If they get the Sixers in the first round with Joel Embiid, guys, can they beat them? I'm not sure they can right now.
Now, Kurt, I'm just wondering, okay, what do we know? What do we know now? Because let's go in here. Let's go in. You talking about the low-hanging fruit? I'm going for the low-hanging fruit. The rapper, basketball player known as Dame Lillard. What do we know now that we didn't know then about that trade? Is there any buyer's remorse, you think, from Milwaukee? Now that they got him up close, he's in their facility, they travel with him, they see what his strengths are, what his defensive liabilities are. What do we know now about Dame the Buck that we didn't know then?
Getting old. Like, it's not that he's not still Damian Lillard. It's just like the rest of us when we get old. We're not Damian Lillard quite as often, right? Like, we're not quite the same guy. This was an all-NBA player who's not going to be on an all-NBA team this year. He has been clutch, but he's not doing it every night as consistently as he did before. That's been kind of the issue over the course of the regular season. Maybe he can raise that level in the playoffs. He has had, obviously, huge clutch playoff games in the past, but he has not been that guy night in and night out. And the other thing I think the real buyer's remorse there is less, hey, we have to trade Drew Holiday to get Damian Lillard. It's, hey, maybe we should find a way to make sure he doesn't end up in Boston. Like, that's what kills him. Like, they gave up Drew Holiday, and he goes straight to their rival. Oh, and by the way, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league can now match up with Dame Lillard in the playoffs. Like, that was the huge mistake. Was they needed to get him somewhere where out west.
Yeah, or have him stay out west. So, speaking of the Celtics, though, zero free throws
Wow.
You don't see that often. As in never. As in never. I mean,
come on.
Jason Tatum ain't had a whole lot to say, but what he said hit pretty hard. Here's Jason Tatum.
You've taken a lot of strides in your career to get to the free throw line. You guys took zero free throws tonight, first time ever. What is it like playing a game where nobody gets to the line on the team?
Another day in the NBA.
We saw a solar eclipse on Monday. No free throws on Wednesday in an NBA game by one team. I think the Bucks had two, and they were from Giannis, right? The Bucks might have two. Like, so is this just a statistical anomaly? Is this part of this grand conspiracy that's been floating around in the atmosphere around the NBA overcorrecting the scoring from earlier in the season? Like, how the hell does this happen, Kurt?
It's exactly that. Look, the league can deny it all they want. Eyeball evidence and statistical evidence show. Look, you watch a game now, they are not calling contact on drives the same way they did before. Guys had learned to kind of, hey, they were taking advantage. If you're going to call everything, then I'm going to veer on a weird path and make sure there's contact on the way to the rim, and I'm going to get that call, and if I can get the end one, great, but I'm going to get to the line. But they've kind of, like you said, the pendulum has just swung so far the other way that I was at Lakers Warriors last night. Gary Payton pretty much flattened Rui Hachimura, just came through with his body and took him out. No call. Like, they're not calling anything right now around the rim. And it's just swung so far that guys are clearly getting fouled and nothing's being called. This is the ultimate expression of that, isn't it? I mean, a lot of teams shot jumpers, but you're telling me a game with Giannis, you know, yes, he missed. He played a half. Giannis Antetokounmpo didn't get fouled going to the line. Lillard gets to the line. Jason Tatum didn't get fouled.
It's wild, man.
Brown didn't get the. There's a lot of guys going inside there, man.
Hey, Mike, the other day we were complaining, or many were complaining, about the Aliyah Edwards offensive foul moving screen call. And like, you know, you never want to see a game come down to that. Is this the first day in the history of basketball, Michael, that people are complaining about a lack of foul calls? We want to see more from the officials.
I
never thought I'd get to a point in my life.
I don't get enough
career
Scott Foster in my life. More Scott Foster.
So what do we have to look forward to, Kurt, in the star-studded play-ins, foul-wise? Because you might have Embiid in there. You might have Jimmy Butler. You might have Steph Curry, LeBron James. Who knows?
Suns
are like, Kevin Durant might be there. If not Kevin Durant, De'Aaron Fox. So what should we expect? What should we expect, basically, all those stars in the play-in? And how is the game going to be called in the playoffs? Is this a little warning that, hey, get ready, you're going to let them play in the playoffs?
But they always let them play a little bit in the playoffs anyway. It didn't go this far, but like, they've always let them go, and guys still keep attacking and get calls. I don't think it's going to change that much from what it is right now. I think they're just kind of allowing playoff basketball. I don't think the needle's going to move a ton. We'll see. But stars are going to be foul hunting, especially – if that Warriors-Lakers game, I was there last night. That Warriors win almost sets up 9-10 Warriors-Lakers. The Lakers are going to pound it inside and try to draw fouls. They have to. It's obvious how much they missed Anthony Davis in the paint. And if they settle, they're not very good. So that game in itself would be brilliant. They'll be just trying to draw fouls. And I think you'll get more calls than zero. But that's kind of what's been going on. They've just let some playoff basketball go.
The Warriors, you were at that game last night, Warriors-Lakers, as you mentioned, probably a 9-10 play-in preview, unless the Warriors can move up to 8. The Warriors were shooting threes, shocker, as though they were free throws. 26 made threes, 63.4%. So statistically, that makes it the best three-point shooting night we've ever seen. In terms of that many makes at that level of efficiency, Warriors have been playing fantastic basketball. Klay found his way. They're talking about, and they've been talking about, going on a Heat-like run from the play-in through the playoffs. Do you see that for this Warriors team that just won't die, as much as Michael Holley has tried to put them out the pasture? They just won't die.
No, they won't. Look, the Warriors, much more than the Lakers, look like they figured out who they really are now, right? Like, it took forever for them to really integrate, hey, we got to really lean into Kuminga and Podzinski and the young guys. And we've got to mess with – we're not going to be able to start the same five guys. Looney isn't going to play that much. We've got to – Steve took a while for Steve Kerr to come around to it, for their star players, frankly, to come around to it. They're there now, and they're playing well. And, look, last night's a bit of an aberration. When Draymond Green is 5 for 5 from three in the first half, you're like, right, you're doomed. Right? It's just, what if he's hitting and Klay Thompson are hitting, that team's always been unbeatable. Both of them were drilling last night. That's not going to happen consistently. The Lakers are probably the worst team in the league at, or most aggressive team in the league at laying off Draymond. They didn't adjust, and that's kind of been a long knock on Darvin Ham, but I think in a playoff series, LeBron would just take it on himself and say, hey, we got to adjust. That said, the Warriors are in a groove, know who they are playing at this high level, and the Lakers continue to not, man. I mean, do you watch them and think, do you watch the Lakers and think, man, that team's coming together now?
Not without AD.
Well, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis, no.
They were playing some damn good basketball recently, but yeah, Anthony Davis just makes all the difference in the world.
Their defense falls apart without him.
Yeah.
You know what we haven't done this year, Mike and Kurt? You know what we haven't had a really passionate, this guy should be MVP. No, this is the MVP. The MVP conversation is pretty muted. It's pretty, low key.
There is one. Is there a conversation?
You tell us, Kurt, is there a conversation about MVP? Is there a conversation about the first team all NBA team?
There's a conversation about who gets fifth on the all NBA team, first team, right? Is it Kawhi or Jason? It'll probably be Jason Tatum, but is it Kawhi or Tatum or Durant? Because the top four are kind of a lock. It's Jokic and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Jokic is probably going to win MVP. I'll tell you right now, he's on top of my ballot. But I spent a lot of time, like, to me, he and Shai are in almost dead heat, and you're. I don't quite know how to split them totally. It's a bit subjective. Then you've got in Doncic and Giannis will finish. Doncic will finish third, probably Giannis fourth now. But those top four are locks. It's that fifth spot is the only question on all NBA. I don't think it's been nearly as toxic, by the way. Normally we've had really intense MVP discussions. That has not been the case this year. It hasn't been.
Yeah, no, it feels like something's kind of missing, but it's, as Embiid said, it's a little refreshing too.
It's funny because without the toxicity, it hasn't been intense, but for me, it was so hard to parse them apart. But you're not having the intensity we did with Jokic and Embiid last year.
No.
Although part of that may simply be that Jokic won, so some of the criticism against him pulls back.
Yeah, I would say that. When it comes to Luka, though, MVP or not, I mean, like, it's about what he does in the postseason, right? Like, how dangerous are the Dallas Mavericks, man? Like, so it looks like we're probably going to get Mavs Clippers for, what, the third time in 5 years? That seems to be the way it's lining up. You know, obviously a lot to be settled. But, like, how dangerous is Dallas?
I think they're the second best team in the West right now, the way they're playing. I don't totally believe in the young teams in Minnesota and Oklahoma City yet. I do believe in Dallas. First off, Luka. He's been proven to be big in big moments.
Yeah.
But he and Kyrie have blended beautifully. Kyrie has just found a level of comfort with this team. And the other key thing, especially since they made the trade deadline moves to get Garford and pair him, just swap him in with Lively. They've been one of the best defensive teams in the league, top 10 defensive team in the league, and top five, I believe, since the All-Star break. If they're getting stops consistently and they're protecting the rim, and then you got to deal with Luka and Kyrie, and Kyrie's, I don't think you remember this, guys, he's hit some big playoff shots. He's had his postseason moments, man.
A couple.
I think that they are the most threatening team to Denver, and that's a second round series, because, like you said, if they, assuming they beat the Clippers, then they'd come out of the 4-5. and get Denver in the second round. But I think they're the biggest threat because right now they're just playing better basketball.
You said you're not worried about the young guy, the young team. So Minnesota about to get Cat back. They got Denver tonight. Big game tonight for that, with that number one seed on the line. Minnesota gets the one seed. Like, does it, with Cat back, Rudy Gobert, maybe defensive player of the year with apologies to Wimby, like, again, for would be the fourth time, I believe. Does the one seed change how you would look at Minnesota? Does it matter? Like, why don't you buy the Minnesota? If I am at Oklahoma City, these have been among the best teams all season.
Yeah.
Why are you so, you know, it's not to put words in your mouth, but you're kind of dismissive of the young guns in the Western Conference. Why? They haven't been through it enough yet? What is it that you don't see in them?
It's just that. Oklahoma City, I think physically you can push them around a little bit. They're both young and they need a little more bulk. Minnesota's got the bulk. They've got the size. The defense travels. I just think they've got a win for you with – it's Anthony Edwards learning how to do this. It's the first time through for this group together, and it's not all veterans. I think, though, what makes them dangerous is Anthony Edwards has had some playoff moments. But more than that, having Rudy Gobert, who has been through this in Utah, which didn't go as far as you want but has been there, and more importantly, Mike Conley – having a steady veteran point guard, I think, makes them the more dangerous of these two teams. They've got the defense will travel. They've got a point guard who will settle them down. I think that makes them a bigger threat, but I still think they're about a year away, which is only concerning in the fact that, I mean, Towns really hasn't been through this either. It's really just concerning that their ownership situation and financial cliff that's coming. I don't know how long they can sustain this. Like, their window's much shorter than like OKC.
So that word settled, I'll end on that. There is so much that is unsettled right now in terms of seeding when it comes to the NBA playoff picture. I'll ask you this and take it wherever you want to go. What are you crystal clear about? What are you sure about when it comes to the NBA playoffs?
Right now, looking at the way everybody's stumbling around in the East, Boston is going to come out of the East. And they've had the best record. They've cruised in. But in the West, I can come up with, man, if the Clippers get this together, and we talked about Dallas, and I don't buy Milwaukee the way they've stumbled in, and I do believe in Boston. So I'm crystal clear that Boston is going to make a run and be the best team in the East. I'm beyond that. I think what's fun about these playoffs is I really don't know. Like, is Milwaukee going to kind of figure it out and actually become a threat? How about the Knicks? Even without Julius Randle, suddenly can they, in this East, can they make a run? I'm kind of out on Cleveland now. I'm not sure. I was in on them earlier and I'm out. And out West, again, I think that there's tiers maybe, but it's Denver and everybody else, but they're the Clippers look like they could be a threat if they're healthy.
Everybody and else is interesting. Yeah.
Everybody else is interesting. It's really kind of together. And the, is Philadelphia the second best team in the East, guys?
Maybe.
When home? Maybe, yeah.
Maybe they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kurt and Mike, you know, since Boston's coming out of the East, NBA Finals, I'll get the guest room ready for both of y'all. We can do the show. Let's do the show from here. We can do the show from Boston.
With the Pugs. I know one thing, the play-in. It's about the Western Conference. Like, give me a Steph, LeBron, Kevin Durant play-in. Shout out to the person who came up with the play-in a few years back. I remember being like, the play-in? Just go to the playoffs. Like, nah, nice work. Nice work out of you, Kurt Hill. Appreciate it. Always a good day when you join us. Show him the shirt on the way out, big dog. Like, you know we take pride in our attire around here. That's a good one.
You messed around. You got one.
Usually people ask me about my plug. I'm going to need your plug on that one. Appreciate you, brother.
Take care, man.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway,
and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.